Welcome to the PPC show brought to you by AdStage. This week, there's a ton to talk about. But before we do, let's banter a little bit, Jenny. You are going to be speaking at HeroConf next week. So are you prepared or are you horribly nervous or both?
And I'm getting there. So yeah, I've got two sessions. So I got a session the second day talking all about Quora ads. I feel very confident, ready to go on that one. I feel like I understand that topic. I'm a domain expert. The other session, it will be a keynote, day one ending. And right before, and like right after me is the happy hour. And so, you know, people really want that alcohol. And so I know like what is separating them from free booze is me. And so I'm hoping that my presentation is entertaining yet enlightening enough that they'll be willing to sit through it before they're ready to get going.
Just don't make that joke. Everyone makes that joke when they're the person before. About, I know I'm the only thing that's standing between you and a drink, and I know never to put blank, you know, marketers in a room when there's drinks. Don't make that joke. They made it at MarTech.
Did they really? Yeah, I've heard people say like between me and lunch, you know, and it's like, yeah. Anyway.
Right. Like, don't remind people. I'm going to remind you that there's an open bar starting soon and you should be really impatient.
Yes. You're just like priming them to like completely discard.
Right.
Don't do it.
But good luck. Good luck. Any of you are going to be out in Philly, make sure you stop by HeroConf, put on by our friends at Hannapin. And if not, buy your ticket now and fly out there. I just did a webinar actually with Hannapin yesterday. Was today yesterday? You can tell it's been a long week. Was yesterday Thursday? It was. Yes. And I did a cross-channel, well, we call it a cross-channel, but it's really like paid social techniques that you can leverage from one network like Facebook and then use another network like LinkedIn. So if you want to listen to that webinar, you could probably find it on the Hannapin here. Well, as my girlfriend calls it, PPC Churro, on the PPC Hero blog. So yeah, that going on. Plus we had a product launch
and tell me about it.
Well, I think we leaked it here on another episode, but we launched our AdStage for Google Sheets, AdStage, Google Sheets add-on. So if you go into Google Sheets and you go to the add-ons in the top and you go to the add-on store, you can find AdStage. And if you use it, it's a lot like Supermetrics, if you know Supermetrics, which if you're a marketer, you probably do. Yet it's a little different. So it's like that, but we don't have like Supermetrics has kind of a nice UI and you can kind of pick some stuff and you can generate tables and charts. So they do a lot of things really nice, a little query history and query builder. Well, not query builder, query like history, and you can rerun stuff. We don't do any of that. What we do is really just like a query builder. You open the sidebar, you can learn how to like write a query. So really you're like building formulas. So you like equals campaigns, and then you put some stuff in there and you get all your campaigns back. So it's kind of like between an API and using a UI. So, and it's only $29. It's stupid cheap. So that's my commercial. That's my commercial.
All channels?
Yeah.
Unlimited?
Unlimited everything, all networks that we support, which are like the big ones we always talk about in search and social. And it's blended data, pre-blended. So unlike Data Studio or most other places, you don't have to get your Facebook data and then your LinkedIn data and then your Twitter data and then put it all together. You can just do equals, campaigns, whatever you want in there, time range, fields, et cetera. And it's already blended. So you'll just get all your campaigns. So if you want top 10 campaigns by spend, it will mix in search, social, whatever you want. So pre-blended data right in Google Sheets. It's $29 a month unless you spend like more than something and then it goes up, but it's pretty cheap. And that's month to month. If you pay in full, you get like 20% off. So I don't know, what is that, like $23 or something?
That's cheap.
We lose money. It's so cheap, we lose money on it if you buy one. But we've had it out for like years, literally 2 years. We looked in our add-on history, but it's been like a private app that we used internally. And maybe, I think we had about a dozen customers that we gave it to when we did it. And now they use it a ton. Like one of the biggest agencies does something like 30,000 calls a month or something outrageous. So we're like, hey, this thing's pretty robust. Let's ship it. So that was a lot of work that we did. Product Hunt. I don't know if you've ever done a launch on Product Hunt, but there's a lot of nagging your friends to get on Product Hunt to vote for your product.
Sahil reached out. I did upvote on Product Hunt. So
he,
yes.
You upvoted because you used the product and you loved it, not because
that's right. That's right.
Yeah, well, it's funny, like anything, it's almost like SEO for product hunters. Like, you got to get some momentum started, but then once it starts snowballing, suddenly you get a lot of people who you don't reach out to. So it was probably our best launch. It's also like a product that's very mass market, you know, $29 for a Sheets add-on. I think Supermetrics has like 30,000 customers. So we're used to selling more enterprisey stuff in the past where, you know, it would take a few months to do a sale. So those are hard to do on Product Hunt, but this has been good. We already sold like our first one, came in at like 2 a.m. right after launch. So it was good. This podcast is just about AdStage. There's also news. The biggest news that I want to talk about is the Facebook UI, because I don't have it and I want it, Facebook. Come on, turn it on for me. I want to see it. Facebook rolled out their new UI to some folks. It'll be rolling out, you know, to everyone eventually. There's no time or date. But they also introduced like a ton of features. And I see you put a ton of notes on this one. So what features come along with this new ads manager?
Yes. So new interface. We all love new interfaces. We all know how much we loved whenever Google did it, and now Facebook's doing it. But like, to be fair, Facebook does this like once a year, like once every 6 months. But some big things that they are doing. So it's supposed to be a little bit cleaner. It's going to help out with that campaign management. And so whenever you're going in there, look for some things like this new copy paste functionality in the campaign creation, which should hopefully make it easier for you to create some ads. You have some auto naming options for campaigns, ad sets, and ad names, and what they're calling a more intuitive ad level creative and placement editing tools. So we shall see how it does. You know, the ads manager UI has always been one of those things that a lot of people hate because it's buggy or it's slow, or it'll like revert a change, or somehow your changes didn't go through. So I'm hoping that this will clean up a lot of those issues.
Right. Yeah, I love the auto naming. Well, first off, there's so many Facebook partners that like they just got put out of business, because I'm sure people were using some of those Facebook ad tech partners to do like campaign creation or ad creation, because it names all your accounts with like, and then Facebook's like, that's a good idea, we'll put it in our UI. Thanks, auto naming. So for the partner in me is like, oh, this is why we got out of Facebook ad creation, because every time you have a good idea, as Facebook should, if they see good ideas out there, they put in their product and they put you out of business. But so I love the auto naming, because, you know, now that we do a lot of joining data on like CRM data, like Salesforce data to Facebook ads, so many people, you know, have terrible UTM structures, and you can now use Facebook rolled out like their version of value track parameters, like Google has value track, which are dynamic parameters. I can just like grab the campaign name. So now if you use auto naming, you make your campaign really specific, then you use a dynamic parameter to put that campaign name into your ad UTM for UTM underscore campaign, you're going to have really good UTMs, which means when you go to Salesforce and generate a report, you can maybe actually see which campaigns, at least based on their UTMs, drove results. And if you use AdStage, of course, add it all together and give you beautiful reports. But this is, I've seen every customer we work with has UTM issues and has a wish list for their campaign naming, ad naming, and UTM structure. So I think this is very welcome change.
Yeah.
End of ramp. And then they did something called cost cap bidding. I took a look at this in the UI, because their description, I literally could not understand what cost cap bidding was until I just looked in the UI. So you can just set up your optimization for ad delivery to be conversion. So it's basically conversion optimization, but there's a new box that's optional called cost control, where you can put an average cost per whatever your conversion is. So if you're doing like add to cart, you can set an average cost per add to cart. And then Facebook tries to, you know, get as many conversions they can at that. It's essentially like a target CPA. Mm-hmm. And then that's the average cost. So they may go over and below, but at the end of the day, it will average whatever you target. So that's, it's kind of a blend between what they used to have, where you can do like cost stuff or you can do conversion stuff. This combines the two. So check it out.
Yeah, check it out.
Okay, there's another Facebook story, the carousel. I think we touched on this last week, right?
This one was, so this one is a slightly different, where they were trying to make your news feed feel like stories, like a Facebook news feed feel like Instagram stories, which is just so like revolutionary. I think, you know, I think it's like so divergent from, you know, when you're scrolling down on Facebook or even in the Instagram feed or the Twitter feed, the LinkedIn feed, the core feed, right? You're always going down. And so to have a feed that where you swipe right and left, like you do with stories. And so they were testing it out. I think it was like alpha, very small, you know, got it. I can't imagine that going well. We haven't seen stories take off on Facebook. You know, the adoption is just not there comparatively to Instagram. But hey, you know, tell me what you think. I don't know about stories as my feed.
Right. Well, yeah, the person who found it is like a known person who like gets into Facebook's code and finds these tests. So this is supposed to be just a prototype, not even like an alpha beta, like a pre-alpha prototype this person found. So it's not, you're probably not going to see it for in the short term. I mean, personally, I look at Instagram stories. I don't go to Facebook, period. So I don't really know what I would do on Facebook if I'd scroll or swipe. But I do know there was a quote in there, which was great. And I think this describes it well. They said, stories is a bustling, up-and-coming neighborhood. Newsfeed is a steadily declining industrial city. That's where Facebook's money is earned, but on its way to becoming a ghost town. And I do think younger generations want to swipe. Oh, wow. Yeah,
so good.
I do think we'll see. I mean, if you read it into the article more too, they talk about just the concept of the newsfeed is like dying. And even though that's where they make their money, it's just like old school and it doesn't work. So now can they make swiping work instead of newsfeed? We will see, Facebook. Good luck. Let's talk about Snap. So Snapchat's audience network, we talked about, they announced that their big partner day, they're going to add an audience network. So there's a really good article from someone.
I think Ad Exchanger, Allison.
Right. It was very like, hey, this is what agencies think about adding a partner network or an audience network and kind of the wish list for agencies. And I think it was a lot of really common sense stuff that if you've bought display inventory in the past 20 years or programmatic, in the past 20 years, that's what you'd want too. Transparency, you want a blacklist, you want to be able to pick and choose where the placements are and understand where the traffic's coming from. Kind of the normal stuff that took Facebook 3 years to figure out. So we'll see. We'll see if Snap actually can ship most of this stuff. From the tone of the article, it sounded like Snapchat hasn't built anything yet. And this was one of those, the CEO makes an announcement when there's no product, but.
Yeah, this one's a tough one. I mean, right. So you have the audience network and everyone is going to compare you to Google, to Facebook. So anytime you launch something, you know, LinkedIn has one, Twitter has one, Snap has one. And let's be honest, like LinkedIn's isn't transparent. Twitter's isn't transparent. You know, Google's is to an extent, right? Facebook's isn't that transparent, but again, you got to give them credit. Like they're moving in the right direction. They understand that this is what needs to happen. But some of these agencies are just like, really, I don't know. I thought it was a little rough to say, hey, you just launched this and you need to have all these features. Just right. Like, well, come on.
Well, and as usual, you know, we all kind of moan about Facebook, but Facebook is incredibly successful. So in one sense, you don't want to imitate them because they're in the news for all these privacy issues and lack of transparency. But on the flip side, that is what, you know, led them to do billions of dollars in ad revenue. So if you're in Snapseed, it's like, well, I'm sure agencies want full transparency, but the proven model from all these networks is just opt in and trust us. Yep. And if we don't give you another option, that's what you have to do. So
speaking of billions though, how about that IPO? Pinterest.
Right. Yeah.
Woo. I like this one. You know, cause we haven't had like a social network IPO in a while. I mean,
don't call them a social network. They were very clear.
That's right.
We are
that's right.
Social network.
That's right. I forgot.
They're trying very hard to distance themselves from the quote unquote social network market. They were a place people go to get inspired, to do the things they're trying to do. And to be fair, you know, they are a directional advertising source. Like users go there when they want to find something. It's on an interruption based platform. Same as Quora. Quora, people are going to Quora to find answers. They're not reading the news and you're like, hey, read this thing. So Pinterest has that. And I think in their IPO filing, they were very clear, like to really repeat that theme about how we're different. And even the one quote I remember too, is that someone said, Pinterest is one of the few friendly corners of the internet. It very much has that vibe right now, and they want to protect that. Of course, I'd argue that's because they don't have that many users yet. I mean, they do have 250 million MAUs, but compared to like the billions of Facebook. So if they, as you scale, that's when the trolls show up. So the trolls just haven't showed up on Pinterest, but they could at any day, and then all that friendliness probably goes away.
Yeah, very true. I, you know, this is one that I think we've all seen coming. I think you and I talked about this one like last year. We knew it was going to happen in 2019. It happened, you know, right now, this week. So the real question is though, but like, did you go get some stock? I mean, we talked about Snap stock, like Pinterest started out at 19 and they're like already like popping. Like, we'll see where they are right now as we talk.
Well, and I know they purposefully kind of lowered their price.
They did.
They originally priced below what their last private valuation was. And people were like, oh my God, it's a down, you know, a down valuation. But very quickly after they IPO'd, their valuation went up.
Yeah, they closed at $24.40 yesterday. So they went up $5.40, which doesn't sound like a lot. But hey, when you're at $19, I mean, that's a really nice bump in one day, you know, 25% after an IPO. Dang, it's good.
Yeah, that is a very nice bump. So, and then some numbers, let's see, they sold 75 million shares on Wednesday for $19 each after they marketed them kind of, you know, in their announcement in the $15 to $17 range. So they outperformed expectations, and then now stock's up to whatever you just said, 24. And then that values them at around 12.7 billion. So now the stock is bumped, they're probably closer to like 14 billion.
Yeah.
And that's where, yeah, Snapchat's 16 billion. So they're pretty much just as valuable as Snap. And if you think about, Snap has already kind of pulled out all the stops for their advertising model. Like, they're adding audience network already. They've had really been going aggressively into advertising for about a year now. And Pinterest feels very much like just touching the surface of doing some basic e-commerce stuff.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
Nice.
All right. Oh, I mean, we got a couple. So like, did you, and this one isn't ad tech, but like Zoom, which we use to record this podcast. Thank you, Zoom. I mean, theirs is unreal for like B2B SaaS, and they're going public. If you're not following this stuff, this, as Scott calls them, the unicorn class of IPOs, it's going to be a fun year to watch all these.
Right. So we have Lyft, obviously, just popped, although they're struggling a little bit. You have Zoom, and then, you know, we're going to see Slack, Postmates, Palantir, Uber, Airbnb, and of course Pinterest. So it's going to be a very busy IPO few months.
A lot of San Francisco millionaires.
That's true. I'm not one of them. I know somebody over at Pinterest who we were at a different company together, and when he left, in my mind, I remember him like recruiting me to go there. I don't know if that's true or not, but in my mind, I remember that. And then I didn't. I ended up actually staying in my last company and then coming to AdStage. But I messaged him the other day and I said, maybe I made the wrong choice. Maybe I should have went to Pinterest. I mean, if they got those shares, you know, he was not like employee number 10. So he's not going to be like off the coast of the Maldives in a yacht or something. But I'm sure his stock he didn't get was 19 or 24 bucks either. So I'm sure he made a pretty penny. So, that was a miss on Wicker's part. Whoops. So lots of IPOs. We'll see. Maybe if our Google Sheets add-on just sells like crazy, we'll ride that to a $19 billion valuation. I did also, there was a good story about Google's ad fraud business. And when we were talking about Snap adding audience network, like once you add a network that's beyond your control, you start putting your ads on other people's properties, you get into the land of ad fraud, and it is unavoidable, right? There will be ad fraud, because if you pay someone to click on an ad, then, or if revenue is generated when someone clicks on an ad, there are going to be bot farms and all this crazy stuff. And I don't know if you got a chance to read that one about the Chinese Android apps that were just committing insane amount of ad fraud.
I guess for me, it's just like, it just shows you how sneaky they've gotten because of how much money they can make. Like, so this ad fraud researcher, they're called Checkpoint. They found that there was code that was causing the app to automatically click on ads without the user's knowledge. So they were like writing code to click on these ads. And I just like, I was just dumbfounded that you could actually do that. Like, oh, wow. But hey, whenever you are, you know, trying to get what they had 50 million downloads of this like one app, like that's a lot of clicks. That's a lot of revenue that's coming in because you wrote some code. Like, wow.
And it's, yeah, what's crazy is, so their strategies, they put it in apps that are like useful apps that right. you might use. So some of the ones were like a flashlight app, AIO flashlight, Total Cleaner, Omni Cleaner, selfie cameras. Yeah, the most popular one was like a selfie camera that had a bunch of like cool filters on it. Meanwhile, not only it clicks on ads, not only like when you're using the app, but even when you're not using the app, it runs in the background and just clicks and clicks and clicks. It's crazy how much fraud was generated from it. And apparently in China, this is just normal. Like ad fraud is common and it's like no big deal. Like these, all these apps came from a group called DU Group, which apps have now been delisted. But I'm like, wouldn't it be more than delisting? Like, wouldn't you sue them or what, you know, like, I don't know. Yeah. They have investment from Baidu. This is not just like a fringe group. This is a Baidu spinoff that Baidu still owns like 25% of that is systematically filling your, you know, system with spam. And it's also apparently, according to the article, also tracking data and sending it back to China, you know, quote unquote China. So this is like pretty bad. And this is in Google's App Store, is one of the top apps. And it's one of the problems I've always had with the Android versus iPhone debate, or not problems, one of the big kind of negatives of an Android. I've used both iPhone and Android. I am Android now, but I do miss the ability to go into the App Store and trust that the apps you download are reliable and not stealing your information and committing ad fraud. Where in Google, it's just like, yeah, it's the Wild West. You want a flashlight? Good luck. Good luck trying not to get a flashlight. Your data.
Man. Yeah. This is nuts. I mean, and they were, the DU group, they found they were involved with like 5,000 apps, like 5,000. What?
And they'll buy apps. So they'll find apps that have like small user bases and they'll just offer those folks like, oh, we'll give you $1,000 for your crappy old app you don't maintain, but it's got a few hundred users. And then they just, you know, put some code in there to turn those 100 users into bot farms. And it's crazy. So
if you're running display campaigns, go check your placements.
Yeah, there's one that had, you know, BuzzFeed, who I have to also give credit to. I keep finding myself reading BuzzFeed articles about tech and being like, oh, this is like good reporting, which when they used to just do nothing but, you know, listicles of like top 10 ways to, you know, get rid of your tan lines, I'd be like, BuzzFeed is the worst. And now I'm like, oh, they're doing good news. But they did a report back in March where there were video ads running behind a banner ad. So they'd have a banner and then just secretly there was a video playing behind it to get a bunch of video views. So as an advertiser, there's really not much you could do. Like JD said, yeah, go check your inventory to see where you're getting it from. Strongly consider if you want to use these display networks or audience networks. If you're doing app installs and you're not getting installs that actually use your product and convert into, you know, however you make your money in your product, you know, probably ad fraud. Same thing with display, for running display in like these various ad networks. Look at your down funnel metrics and see if you make money off these folks. And then, you know, the reality is, since you can't control it, you just have to bake that into your cost, right? So for every 5 clicks you get, you might get 5 clicks of ad fraud. But if you know that, you know, really the cost of the click is double. You're just paying for like 5 clicks of fraud and 5 real ones. If you get rid of the 5 fraud ones, you'd probably still be paying for 5 clicks. But those 5 clicks would be twice as expensive. So at the end of the day, you're probably getting what you're going to get what you get. There's only so many human beings that want your product and see it and find it, and you pay for them. It's just the auction model has all these like people milking off of it and milking those profits away from probably Google. Google would be the one that would probably get a big chunk of the money. So they lose a lot of money. And as do you, maybe you're overpaying because of ad fraud, but I think the market would adjust, like the auction would adjust. Very ranty today.
You get them, Paul.
Right. I feel like you're just napping over there. And I'm like, and then the ad fraud in China. I mean, are we going to do anything about it? Can we sue the country and be like, I mean, Baidu, that's like, Baidu is like their Google. Like your Google systemically funding a company that commits ad fraud at scale. Anyway, speaking of Google, they also added YouTube ad-free music something or other.
Yeah. Well, I think... Somewhere I was reading too. I mean, I think like the most viewed videos are music, like on YouTube, right? And so I think what they're trying to now do is like, hey, like how do we profit off of that? And so this one I think is more of like, look out maybe for like Pandora, maybe look out Spotify. I think this is like what they're trying to compete against is, so again, how do you monetize YouTube outside of just like video ads? And so people go to YouTube to listen to music. So now you can listen, have no ads, and what is it, $10? Yeah, $10 a month. And you can have it all. And this service is available on the Google Home speaker and the Google Assistant smart speakers in 16 countries, including US, UK, and Australia.
And I think the news here that they're trying to do is, you today you can buy YouTube Music Premium for $10 a month if you want to listen to music on your Google Home device. Mm-hmm. But now they're taking that and saying, if you don't want to pay $10 a month, you can now get the ad-supported version. So you basically get the Spotify treatment. Like,
right.
You don't pay, fine. You're just going to get an ad. If you do pay, it's $9.99. And this is, you know, music is becoming like a battleground. So another story was how Amazon is also adding ad-supported streaming music. So people are realizing people don't want to pay money for an ad-free experience at $10 a month. So we're just going to go back to putting ads into music. It worked for radio for 40 years and nobody wants to pay, you know, $9 to get rid of the ads. So Amazon's going back. Well, Amazon's getting into it for the first time by putting ads into their streaming music service. So you have Echo and Alexa going that route. You have Google Home now ad supported. And of course you have Spotify and Pandora that are already gone that route. It's a real battle happening in, you know, which music service are you going to use?
Yeah. What also just shows too, how we use our home speakers too. Like I think 95% of the time for my home speaker, it's playing music. Mm-hmm. Play this, right? I'm not really interacting. I'm not really asking questions. It's like, go set a timer for the kitchen and go play music. Like 98% of the time, that's what that is. And I think, how do you monetize that? And I think that's what they're really trying to do.
Yeah. I mean, I'm the same boat. I stopped using, I was like really into the speaker for like a few months where it was like, oh, play the Beatles, play this, play that. And I signed up for Amazon Music almost just because it was a total one of those just sure. Like, cause I was like, hey, play this. I'm like, you need an Amazon Music subscription. Do you want to start a free trial? I was like, sure. And then that rolled into a paid trial, and I ended up with Amazon Music for 4 months that I never used. But then I got over it. I don't know. Then I was like, no, I'll just go back to turning on Spotify and on my computer that plays in my house anyway. So, but I'm not alone, or I am. There's a lot of people who don't do that. I know a ton of people use their smart speakers for music. So now you have many options, no matter what your speaker of choice is. You have one, of course, Apple too, with their whole announcement a month ago at their conference about getting into like the media business. So that, you know, they're really pushing Apple Music and now Apple News. So, and a lot of it I think is because they want to have their smart speakers be the one. I mean, there's even this term we keep saying, smart speakers, like it's now a category.
Yeah. It's a Trojan horse is what it is.
True. So. I think, is that everything?
Yeah, I think we got them all. We kind of hit on it, but yeah, I think the last one was Amazon's doing the exact same thing.
Oh yeah, the music one. Oh, the part I pulled out from this article though is that their revenue last year doubled to $3.4 billion. That was in 2018. And for Amazon, and then now this is another way that they're going to make money that doesn't even, it's not even included in their $3.4 billion from 2018.
Oh yeah. Amazon's good. Amazon has figured out how to basically monetize like the entire like customer value chain. you want two-day delivery? Cool. You can pay for that. You want videos? Yeah, you can pay for that. You want music? You can pay for that. You know, you want books? You can pay for that, you know? And so now they've got their Alexa, which the Echo, I think it's the number one from what I've read last, was the number one as far as home device. And so now it's, how do we monetize that? And so they'll do it and they'll do a great job of it. They are just crushing right now. I think customer experience is fantastic. And I don't think I've ever had them mess up like a shipping order. How about you? They're just good.
Yeah, you know, I don't think so. I think anytime anything was wrong, it was because of the merchant. Although they did ship something with the unsealed like shipping envelope for my girlfriend. just like last week, and it was missing. It was supposed to be two books. One was missing. But again, that wasn't them. It was like a book. So that came from like Amazon seller who just didn't seal it properly. So yeah, from Amazon, no. And if you ever have a problem, they're just like, oh, we'll credit you. Just keep it. Like they're instantly just, we make so much money, we don't care. Were you unhappy? We'll send you a new one. I like, there's been things too. If you order things that are cheap, like I ordered batteries and I ordered the wrong size. And I legitimately was like, oh, I ordered the wrong battery. But I, how do I return them? And they were like, just keep them. It's actually like, you know, they didn't say it, but it's cheaper for them to just have, let me keep the batteries than pay for me to ship them back.
Right.
So there's a trick. If you ever want something free from Amazon, just order it and then and try to return it. Although I imagine your some flags will go off if you do it more than like once.
Yeah. Cool. You get one of those every 6 months.
Yeah, exactly. You get free batteries every 6 months. Okay, now I've taught you how to commit fraud. That's, I think, the last tip for today's show. If you want more tips on committing fraud or just some of the headlines in tech, you can head over to blog.adstage.io. And of course, go to HeroConf in Philly or tune in. I'm sure they'll stream it. Are they streaming it these days like everybody else?
Man, they should. They should like charge money. Hey, here's like a $300 ticket. Here's a live stream.
Yeah, like $10 or even free. I mean, just that, you know, if the sessions are good, then people are like, oh, I got to go that next year. So I don't know if it sounds like they're not streaming it this year. So you have to go pony up the $100 or $500 or whatever it is for a ticket.
Yeah.
It's yeah. Expensive. Well, we could have a whole nother show on events. We just, you know, we did a booth at MarTech and we're doing HeroConf. I just don't know about events. They're like this old world of thing that is feels weird in today's hyper-connected digital world. And I don't know if that's good because it's like, hey, stop and take a breath and meet people. But then when everyone's there, it doesn't seem like anyone is actually enjoying doing that. They're like, I just want to be on my phone. So this is boring. Like I feel like events need a rebirth. There needs to be some like major disruption in the event industry to turn them into something that works for the modern event goer.
Just go ahead and just like flip the switch on that Wi-Fi and see what happens.
Right. Oh yeah, that's true. Like that's a good idea. And I know my girlfriend went to Tony Robbins recently. And if you don't know who Tony Robbins is, he's like the first motivational speaker. I mean, he's in like a million movies as like the motivational speaker, but, and it's almost like a cult, like following people, like really, he's like a business coach and he writes books. Anyway, she went and everyone there gets super fired up and comes back ready to change the world. So whatever he's doing at events, and he does a lot of like every 3 minutes, he makes people stand up. They're yelling stuff. They're talking to each other. Like there is no sitting in your seat for more than like 10 minutes because he knows people are just getting bored and his brand and what he's selling is like excitement and engagement. And so people need to go to that and then copy that shit for their conferences. Cause sitting in a chair for an hour and a half, watching a PowerPoint slide is like, that don't work in 2019.
No, man, you got to move. Either you got to move faster, tell better stories. Yeah. All the things you got to do to be an engaging presenter. If you want your ideas to be communicated well.
Right. I guess it used to be content was good enough because like the only place I can get content was from the speaker. So I needed to pay attention. Now content's free. It's pervasive. It's everywhere. So I don't need you for your content. So I only need you for the entertainment you're going to bring me. Good luck on your speech on Monday.
Dance, monkey.
Right. You are an entertainer, not an educator. No. Although I always said the best educators were good entertainers. Like my professors in college were terrible. Because they're all PhDs and crap. And I'd be like, you don't know how to teach a class. It's like so hard to pay attention to you. Versus like in high school, they would be like, oh, you can teach me calculus because you're entertaining. Now we're really off topic. All right, go to AdStage, check out some stuff. And we will see you on the next podcast.
See you guys.